I have often asked myself how much of my mother's accounts of her meeting with her first husband was a figment of our imagination. If not for the photographs, I would have doubted that he had ever existed. A friend once talked of my mother's admirable resistance to the unwanted. And since for her so much of her life was unwanted, she invented stories about herself that she came to believe with such conviction that we started doubting our own certainties. In her mind, their courtship began with a dance. It seemed more likely to me that his parents would have asked her father for her hand, a marriage of convenience between two prominent families, as had been the convention in Tehran in the 1940s. But over the years, she never changed the story, the way she did so many of her other accounts. She had met him at her uncle's wedding. She was careful to mention that in the morning she wore a flowery crepe de chine dress, and in the evening one made of Duchess satin. And they danced all evening. After my father had left, she would say, and then immediately add, because no one dared dance with me in my father's presence. The next day he asked for her hand in marriage. Saifi. I cannot remember ever hearing his last name spoken in our house. We should have called him, with the echo of proper distance, mother's first husband, or perhaps by his full title, Saif ul-Mulk Bayat. But to me, he was always Saifi, good-naturedly part of our routine. He insinuated himself into our lives with the same ease with which he stood behind her in their wedding pictures, appearing unexpectedly and slyly whirling her away from us. I have two photos from that day, more than we ever had of my own parents' wedding. Saifi appears relaxed and affable, with his light hair and hazel eyes, while my mother, who is in the middle of the group, stands frozen like a solitary centerpiece. He seems nonchalantly, confidently happy. But perhaps I am wrong, and what I see on his face is not hope, but utter hopelessness, because he too has his secrets. There was something about her story that always bothered me, even as a child. It seemed not so much untrue as wrong. Most people have a way of radiating their potential, not just what they are, but what they could become. I wouldn't say my mother didn't have the potential to dance. It is worse than that. She wouldn't dance, even though, by all accounts, she was a good dancer. Dancing would have implied pleasure, and she took great pride in denying herself pleasure or any such indulgences. All through my childhood and youth, and even now in this city, so far removed from the Tehran that I remember, the shadow of that other ghostly woman who danced and smiled and loved disturbed the memories of the one I knew as my mother. I have a feeling that if somehow I could understand just when she stopped dancing, when she stopped wanting to dance, I would find the key to my mother's riddle and finally make my peace with her. For I resisted my mother, if you believe her stories, almost from the start. I have three photographs of my mother and Saifi. Two are of their wedding, but I am interested in the third, a much smaller picture of them out on a picnic sitting on a rock. They are both looking into the camera, smiling. She is holding onto him in the casual manner of people who are intimate and do not need to hold onto one another too tightly. Their bodies seem to naturally gravitate together. Looking at the photograph, I can see the possibility of this young, perhaps not yet frigid, woman letting go. I find in the photograph the sensuality that we always missed in my mother in real life. When, I would say, when did you graduate from high school? How many years later did you marry Saifi? What did he do? When did you meet father? Simple questions that she never really answered. She was too immersed in her own inner world to be bothered by such details. No matter what I asked her, she would tell me the same stock stories, which I knew almost by heart. Later, when I left Iran, I asked one of my students to interview her, and I gave specific questions to ask, but I got back the same stories. No dates, no concrete facts, nothing that went outside my mother's set script. A few years ago, at a family gathering, I ran into a lovely Austrian lady, the wife of a distant relative who had been present at my mother's wedding to Saifi. One reason she remembered the wedding so clearly was the panic and confusion caused by the mysterious disappearance of the bride's birth certificate. In Iran, marriages and children are recorded on birth certificates. She told me, with the twinkle of a smile, that it was later discovered that the bride was a few years older than the groom. Mother's most recent birth certificate makes no mention of her first marriage. According to this document, which replaced the one she claimed to have lost, she was born in 1920, but she maintained that she was really born in 1924 and that her father had added 4 years to her age because he wanted to send her to school early. My father told us that my mother had actually subtracted 4 years from her real age when she picked up the new birth certificate, which she needed so that she could apply for a driver's license.